The end of the beginning. When spring arrived again in Salzburg, and the fear of the smallpox had long since faded, my father decided it was time to begin touring again. I saw the carriage waiting on the Geitrodgasse. For a moment, I stayed in the music room, seated on the bench of the clavier, tidying the white layers of petticoats that peeked through my blue silks. Down below, Mama looked on as the coachman helped Papa drag the last of his and Wolfrul's belongings into the carriage boot. They were headed to Italy, where my brother would play for the Habsburgs and the Roman public. The clavier, usually occupied in the mornings by Wolfrul, sat unopened and covered with a white cloth. I had not touched it in several weeks. Over the winter, I'd spent less of my time in this room and more time with Mama, reciting poetry with her, and learning how to stitch a lace pattern. Now I sat at the bench and ran a hand lightly across the instrument's covered surface. My hair hung loose about my shoulders, waves and waves of it, untouched and unruly. I smoothed it back as well as I could, then pushed it behind my shoulders with a few pins. It was not unlike the style I'd worn so long ago, on the bright autumn day when a court trumpeter had come to listen to me perform. I had been 8 years old then. I had turned 18 in January. My years of performing before an audience were over. Finally, when I felt ready, I rose from the bench. On the Geitrodgasse, I saw my brother tilt his head up toward my window. He waved a hand at me. I smiled at him, then headed downstairs. The air was warm today, the breeze ruffling the curls of my hair. I made my way to where my brother stood alone. When he heard my footsteps against the cobblestones, his eyes lit up and he ran at me, wrapping his arms around me in a tight embrace. "Wolfrul," I said, laughing. "You are such a child to run at me like that." "I don't care," he said. "I will miss you. I'll write you letters, of course, and tell you everything that I see. You will feel as if you are right beside me." I smiled at him. He had been growing steadily all winter, his limbs turning thin and awkward. Pockmarks lingered on his face from the smallpox, forever prominent, but through them I could still see the face of a young boy, at once too naive and too mature for his age. "I will look forward to them every day," I said. I touched his cheek. "Tell me everything, Wolfrul. Even what you eat for breakfast." He laughed. Behind him, Papa and Mama conversed in low voices with the Hagenauers. They were financing part of this trip, and I could tell in Papa's gestures that he was thanking them for their continued generosity. Again, our rent was delayed. It was our endless state of being, teetering on the balance scale of the world, hoping always for better tidings. "You will be safe here, with Mama?" Wolfrul asked. He stepped closer to me so that the others would not hear him. I had told him, after he'd begun his recovery from the smallpox last autumn, what had happened to the kingdom on that night in Olmütz. That the kingdom was consumed by fire, that it was gone, and had been rebuilt, and that we shouldn't talk about it any more. He had taken it all in stride, as if the end of my imagination of it was the end of his as well. Since then, I had not been visited in my dreams. Neither, I think, had he, although he did not speak of it. There were no more visions of Edelweiss growing on sheet music, or silhouettes of fairy creatures waiting in our music room. There was no more magic permeating our lives, aside from the magic of the real world. Of music. His and mine. Real and true. "We will be safe. I assure you," I told him. Wolfrul looked down. "Promise me you will write me too, and tell me everything. Send me your compositions. I hope you continue to write them down. I swear to you that I will not let them end up in our father's hands." "I will send what I can," I opened my arms to Wulfril and hugged him tightly. Wulfril's voice sounded muffled against my dress. "I've never been without you," he murmured. I held him to me for a long time, savoring his embrace, and said nothing. When Wulfril finally released me and climbed into the carriage, I walked over to stand with Mama and said my goodbyes to my father. He patted my cheek and touched my nose with the tip of his finger.
"Be good, Mariana," he said to me. "Take care of your mother."
I nodded. He had stopped calling me Nonril as soon as I'd turned 18. "Have a safe trip, Papa." He smiled at me. Something sad lingered in his eyes. For a moment, I wondered if he regretted leaving me behind. That he had also regretted what he'd done in Vienna. That forces outside of his powers made him act as he did. I thought for an instant he could see something in me, and he wished he could have created more with it. Then it was gone, as always, and he leaned in to kiss my forehead.
"I will write to you and your mother," he said.
I stayed at the music room's window long after their carriage had vanished down the Geiturtgasse. I sat until the sun had shifted the shadows in the room and my mother called for me to join her. Only then did I rise, smooth my skirts, and leave. Before I did, I stared out the window one more time and remembered the kingdom of Bach as I had first known it, with its upside-down trees and white sand beach, the little path, and the wayward signpost. I remembered that first blustery day in autumn, 10 years ago, when it had appeared in my dreams. I thought I could see it again now, a ghostly image imprinted over the Geiturtgasse's wrought-iron signs and balconies, the faded castle rising up behind the buildings like a forgotten cloud. It was the temple of my youth, the representation of so much that I had hoped for. Perhaps it had always existed, and would always exist, ready for the next little girl to make a wish. I did not imagine Hyacinth in the kingdom. I had long ago forgotten what he looked like. Later that evening, I put away my old music notebook and my broken pendant, storing them in a place where I would not look every day.